This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. As schools across the country open up to in-person learning and possibly shut down again, the school year may well have to move back online. This has been a difficult adjustment, but there are schools that have been online for years that can offer a model to look toward. Heather Boleen is the superintendent of Great Lakes Learning Academy. It's an online public school serving grades 6 through 12 out of East Lansing. Heather Boleen, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me. Such a pleasure to be here.
So you've been at this at the Academy for some time now, at a point in which many traditional schools have just been struggling to find their feet. Can I ask first off, what were your observations of what happened last spring when all schools had to enter the online space?
You know, we watched our fellow traditional educators struggle a little bit and did the best we could to reach out to them to help them. The thing that I worried about most is that there would be a perception that online education is bad. And what I most want to be able to say is it's not online education that's bad. It's how you prepare for and what you expect out of what you're providing in an online education setting that makes all the difference in the world. And that's really what we focused on when we worked with our colleagues, you know, at ISD meetings or other professional organizational meetings and things of that nature, to really help them improve upon and enhance how they provided their online offerings for their students. Because the bottom line is we want all of our students to learn. This is important for all of us.
You know, it felt like there were just two major issues, like right out of the gate, that just had to get addressed. The first, of course, being who had technology, which is something I'm sure that you work with your students as well. But just also the psychological differences between online learning and what happens in a classroom. Which of those do you see as more core?
You know, I think it's the latter, the psychological connections. And we look at that really as an engagement issue. Engagement or relationships are the key and the heart to a successful online learning experience. You know, I tell teachers in real estate, they say location, location, location. Well, in online education, it's engagement, 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 or relationship, relationship, relationship. You have to form that bond with students. And a lot of times teachers are used to students coming to them. You know, you have those 30 or so students sitting in a classroom and they raise their hand to get your attention, but they've been delivered to you. You didn't have to, as the teacher, go out and do anything to engage with them. In an online setting, the students can get lost. They can be hard to connect with if you're not very intentional about going out and reaching out to them, making sure they understand how to connect with you, and then forming that partnership with them so that they keep coming back to the table, so to speak. And so that engagement with the student is just the foundational cornerstone to everything that's going to happen in those next steps in an online setting.
Will you tell us a little bit more about the Academy? What does your current student population look like?
Yeah, we have 6th through 12th grade students in our academy, and we ended the year last year with just over 1,200 students, so we're looking to start the year at about that same place. So we roughly say we have 1,200 students, and by roughly, I say because we graduated just under 250 students, so we had a lot of enrollments, and it depends on how many of those enrollments get finalized before the first day of school on the 31st of August. So we'll have approximately 1,200 students, and of those 1,200 students, probably about 50% of them are new to online education. So we're going to spend a fair amount of time this fall with our teachers just connecting with those students, connecting with those families, helping them learn how to learn online, and helping them see what being an independent learner is all about so that they can have a highly successful experience in our academy.
Can we say that you've had an uptick of interest from families interested in what you're doing and how you're doing it?
That would be a fair characterization. Yes, I've had more than one conversation with a family this summer who were reaching out to get more information, which we absolutely encourage. Families should not take a decision about moving to an online academy lightly. do your homework, reach out, talk to the school about what they have to offer and how they operate. That's absolutely the best way to go about it.
Right.
But in those conversations, one of the themes that I've heard is that families discovered this past spring that, hey, wait a minute, this online education thing isn't what I thought it was, and it may not be so bad. And actually, what they're finding is it's a good fit for their families. And so it may have opened up the gates to some families who wouldn't have otherwise thought about that. Which is encouraging to see, because they're looking at options and what's in their best interest, what's in their students' best interest, of course. And they recognize that the schools, while they did a yeoman's job this spring, aren't set up like an online school is with a robust platform to be able to support the students and the families in this online education world. So, we've had a lot of interest where we hadn't had it in the past.
What type of student tends to be a good fit for an online learning environment?
The good fit is the student who either comes to us already comfortable being an independent learner, or the student who can acclimate to being an independent learner. And by independent learner, I mean someone who is willing to make those first moves, be in charge of their learning and take the initiative to do the things that they need to do and be interested in digging into those lessons and learning, maybe independently for a little while before they, get a chance to talk to their teachers about the lessons, because those lessons don't, necessarily, those connections with teachers are absolutely there and they're absolutely available when the student needs them, but they aren't regular like you think of a master schedule, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, or 8 to 4, whatever that school schedule is kind of set up. So the independent learner is somebody who really is willing to take charge of their educational experience.
Are your classes structured more or less the same as a normal class, just online, or do you really have to rethink through everything about how teachers present material?
Yeah, I think that's the difference between what's happening in our traditional schools and what an online or a cyber academy is set up to do. It is the same class, but that's where the differences are, or the similarities end. Our curriculum is designed to be delivered online. It's designed to be presented asynchronously, so with the support of a certified, highly qualified teacher behind it. Our teachers in the lesson design aspect are facilitating the learning process and enhancing or supplementing the curriculum. They're not delivering the day-to-day instruction. And what I've seen happening in the brick and mortar is more the classroom teacher taking the day-to-day direct instruction that they're doing in the classroom and trying to translate that to an online setting. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So really where the main difference comes in.
What kinds of things translate well from traditional learning and what kinds of things tend to be harder to translate?
Yeah, I think if you look at the concept of a flipped lesson or a flipped classroom, the things that teachers have students do that they can do independently, the research ahead of time or the reading in preparation for the lesson, where they come together and there's directed instruction. Those things that can be done asynchronously translate well. The things that don't translate well are the large group instruction where it requires the teacher's direct instruction. Unless the teacher has put a lot of effort, and it can be done, but at that point, the teacher has then designed an online curriculum for the student. But where they can take those synchronous, large group instructional delivery type opportunities with students and convert them into already made videotapes or small group instruction or project-based things that they're monitoring and facilitating for students, that's where it becomes difficult for them.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Heather Bleen. She's superintendent of Great Lakes Learning Academy. What do you think online learning might mean for students across Michigan who lack a steady internet connection? Could you talk a little bit about how your school has addressed those issues?
Absolutely. Access is absolutely an issue, and it's not just an issue for online schools. It's an issue for our society. So narrowing in on schools, one of the things that we do is we provide not only a laptop for families who choose to or request one. You're not required to get a laptop from us, but we do make them available if you ask for them. But we also provide a T-Mobile hotspot. So in those places where internet access is difficult, a lot of times we can still get a cellular signal. And so we use that cellular data converted via the hotspot into the wireless internet access for those students who need help with access. And because of an agreement with T-Mobile, we can provide that at a much reduced cost, making it actually free for the family. So we are really working hard to make sure that the internet access and the computer equipment access aren't problems that our families are struggling with. We want to make sure that they have those access points taken care of. In fact, we partnered with one of our local school districts this past spring who were having just that same problem, providing access for their remote families. And so through that partnership, we made some of our extra hotspots available to them so they could get that access to their families this spring until such time as they had the means to, you know, enter into their own agreement to do just that. So it is something that if we work together, we can solve, but it goes beyond just what our schools are facing right now.
Heather, I heard what you said that, you know, true online learning is a little bit different approach overall. But if there are teachers or maybe more to the point, parents who are listening right now and kind of freaking out about this fall, do you have any tips or just things that might help people get their heads reset?
You know, I would say for parents especially, but also good for teachers, regardless of the school district that they're teaching in, communication is key. You have to be willing to communicate and you have to not be afraid to reach out. Parents need to reach out to their child's teacher and make sure that they are aware of what the child's needs are. Maybe they're a little apprehensive. Maybe they're having difficulty getting online. Maybe they're just having difficulty understanding the lesson. Whatever that barrier is, the parent is going to see that in the child faster and more effectively than what the teacher can see through the computer. So they're going to have to communicate that information to the teacher. And likewise, the teacher needs to communicate to the parents because they're their eyes and ears in the home. I describe it this way. It's the three-legged stool. And it takes the parent, the student, and the teacher working together for this stool or this education for that student to work. And communication is absolutely the key on both parts to that.
Right. This may sound like a funny question at a time when it feels most kids are gathering with each other en masse via TikTok. But are there ways that you see online education being able to fill the gap for some of the social time that kids would get in a regular in-person school day?
Absolutely. One of the questions I get from prospective parents a lot is, you know, what opportunities for socialization do you have? And it always makes me laugh a little bit inside because I've learned over the years in working with teenagers, their idea of socialization and our idea as older adults of what socialization looks like are totally different ideas. And we have to spend some time identifying what do we mean by social. And kids are so comfortable in a virtual world socializing and feeling comfortable with that socialization that we have to catch up to them in some cases. So it absolutely does.
I know what you mean. It's anyone who's spent time around a kid with a device, you know, kind of knows what you're talking about. But at the same time, I mean, the social time that we get online at any age is not exactly the same as the socializing time that we get with others
It does lack that human interaction touch piece that we know as professionals is very, very important. And that's why even our school has been hit by this pandemic. We do have some face-to-face socialization opportunities in a normal sense. We have field trips where not only the students, but the families are invited to join us us on our field trips. So we went to the King Tut Museum, for instance, when that was over in Grand Rapids one time. And we've gone to a variety of other places. It's really nice to be able to interact in person at those events with families. Even just going to in the fall to a cider mill and taking a hayride together gives us opportunities to socialize. So those are areas where this pandemic has kind of put a kink in our stride. But we'll get back to those hopefully sooner rather than later. But we do have those opportunities and they are in person. So it's a misnomer to think that just because we're virtual, we never do anything in person.
Well, Heather Boleyn of Great Lakes Learning Academy, thank you so much for talking with us. And hey, good luck this fall.
Such a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.